Adam Proto from the Hockey News joins us. Proto, how you doing?
Mr. Gregor, how are you?
Good. You ever been spit on?
Oh, never. Never. I think I would have flipped. I would have disposed with my anti-fighting policies probably right on the spot.
Yeah. Have you ever been bit?
I have not been bit. No. I've been punched. I've been kicked. I've never been bit.
Nice. Yeah. Meg asked what would be worse, if you kicked a guy in the junk on purpose or bit him?
Ooh. Yeah. You know what? I feel like the kick, because you can get more momentum with the kick. You know what I mean? It would have to be like a combination headbutt bite that would give you that.
But yeah, but if you lock in on a bite, man, you're getting like under the skin, breaking the skin. Oof.
Oh, sure. Well, yeah, I mean,
like Hannibal Lecter, man. You could be a Hannibal Lecter biter.
But what's cheaper is what it comes down to, right? Like, what is the most cheap? Is it kicking somebody in the junk or is it biting?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You're voting a kick. It's not bad. Like, they're both cheap, but.
Oh, yeah.
That's a really good question. I might have to put that on our poll. It's a serious question.
Like you should get like a pro wrestling villain.
Oh, exactly.
For that question.
Yeah, like, exactly.
What they get more heat from the crowd.
Like, who cares about the draft? Free agency. I want to know what's cheaper. That's what matters. I went back for fun and was looking at stories, and I find that in the 3 days leading up to the draft is usually where, if there's going to be any articles saying the weakness of a player, they come out at the last moment, like, you know, Aaron Ekblad and different guys like that. All of a sudden, it's like, well, geez, you know, he is good, but. I wonder why that is.
It's interesting. I mean, I think there are teams that would like to get information out about certain players to maybe, you know, dissuade fan bases from you know, clamoring for that player, or maybe push them toward another player. You know, Nick Ritchie has been a name you hear, and I'm not a big draft guy by any stretch of the imagination, Jason, but you hear, you know, names like Nick Ritchie, the guy's value has taken a jump, I think, by most people's estimation, and you wonder how that can change. I mean, there's obviously nothing he's doing right now that's changing people's opinions, so I tend to, you know, look at anything that's said this time of year with a grain of salt, because you just don't know the motives of the people that are giving it to you.
Yeah, it's very true. You wonder if they try to say stuff to throw teams off, because everybody's reading different things. And, I've had GMs. We had David Conte tells me he reads everything because, you know, he goes, I still believe in what I say, but just in case I'm missing something.
Well, and the last thing you want to say as a GM too, right, is, we didn't know that guy was available. And you hear that, you know, quite often, right? So you want to have these guys, you know, out there beating the bushes and taking into account what they think or what they know to be true and trying to separate the wheat from the chaff.
Adam Proto from the Hockey News joins us. The NHL Player Awards are tonight. Sidney Crosby, I think, is a no-brainer to win the Hart Trophy and become the 18th player in NHL history to have won it twice. Very few guys have won the Hart, and we'll get to Crosby in a second. The reason I bring it up is Eric Lindros. If you had a vote, would he be a Hall of Famer?
He would be. I mean, I'm not one of those real super hardliners, to be honest, Jason. When you see some of the players that are in there and you look at the guidelines of what the Hockey Hall of Fame is all about, you know, there are no specifics in terms of, you know, a number of years you have to be dominant in. It's a Hall of Fame, and nobody can deny, you know, Eric Lindros was, you know, a dominant player in a very short era. Unfortunately for him, it happened to be an era where, you know, the league didn't care as much about headshots, and I wrote this a couple years ago. I think the league still owes Eric Lindros an apology for kind of painting him throughout all those years as this, you know, self-involved, narcissist. When really, you know, he looks like the reasonable one now, given the head injuries and, you know, some of the things that happened with him with his collapsed lung flying out of Nashville. If you know Eric Lindros's whole story, it's in my mind, it's inexcusable that he would be, you know, kept out of the Hall of Fame for, you know, somebody having a vendetta against him or people behind the scenes seeing him as this, you know, destructive force on hockey. He made the game more interesting. He was a boy, who could play as a junior with men and play with men, not just, you know, get accustomed to it, not just need a year to progress. He was there, you know, knocking people silly. And I still remember one of my greatest memories as a kid, because we're about the same age. You know, we were in our last year of high school baseball here, Jason, and we got to play. Our team made it out of the Toronto division, and we were playing basically for the wider city championship. our semifinal game was against Eric Lindros' team out of Oshawa when he was playing with the Generals. And, you know, he was like Rob Deere or, you know, Dave Kingman. He either, you know, would hit this bazooka out of the park or he'd go down swinging. But, you know, just to be on the same playing field with that guy and look across and seeing what a brute he was, you understood why, you know, A, he was such a target by us, but also why he was so successful so early. And, you know, to have that, you know, diminished in people's minds because of the way he went out or the fact that he was, you know, decimated by, you know, some brutal checks and stuff that was completely legal at the time and acceptable at the time. You know, I think he's in some ways just a victim of circumstance, of timing, and I don't think that should diminish anything that he did on the ice.
I would agree. It seems Eric Lindros is being punished for the person he was, not the player. And there's a lengthy list of guys in the Hockey Hall of Fame who weren't far from choir boys. And that's why, to me, Eric Lindros gets in the Hall of Fame based on what he did as a player, because when you get into the other stuff, it's way too opinionated and I think way too outside the realms of just you get into a personal opinion rather than looking at facts.
Right, right. Oh, and this is part of the reason why the Hall of Fame process is so flawed, Jason, with the, you know, the Star Chamber selection committee process. I mean, you look at the people that are on it and you go, okay, they're reasonable people. Eric Tkachuk, you know, longtime media person. I don't think he's going to be, you know, holding grudges against anybody, but, you know, this type of thing, you know, when you don't have an explanation for why somebody's in the considered, or when something like the Pat Burns thing happens where, you know, really he was acknowledged as, you know, Hall of Fame worthy by most people when he was still alive, yet it took a good 4 years after his passing to get him in. You know, there's no excuse for no transparency anymore. And I made that case on our website today, you know, that even the rationale that we have, you know, in hockey for why we don't make it transparent is preposterous. And the people that are associated with the Hall of Fame or, you know, our veterans will tell you that, oh, it's, you know, we don't announce the voting because we don't want to embarrass anybody.
Oh, well, please.
What's embarrassing about being considered for a Hall of Fame? We should all be so lucky,
yeah,
in our own lines of work to be considered for the Hall of Fame. That means you did well. It doesn't mean you stunk. So this idea, and again, as I said, you know, if it was about embarrassing the losers, why do we have three people nominated for every award in Las Vegas tonight? We're gonna humiliate two guys by that same rationale. I don't believe in it at all. I think, you know, the Hall of Fame, like a lot of hockey institutions, kind of circles the wagons around itself when you know, some of its motives or rationale behind it is questioned. And I think that's unfortunate because in this case, I think the league, and not so much the league, because it's not the league's Hall of Fame necessarily, but, you know, the hockey culture could benefit, you know, really from opening things up. And you know, if people don't think Eric Lindros is worthy, just make your case and let the facts stand where they may.
Adam Proto from the Hockey News joins us. So going to the awards, you know, Crosby becomes, I think he wins tonight. I don't think it's a real big one. The closest one to me is probably for the Norris Trophy. Who do you like?
Well, I had a vote for that trophy. I was lucky enough to have one. And you know, I voted for Zdeno Chara. You know, I know that Drew Doughty looked phenomenal, and you know, he was phenomenal. But I think Chara in the regular season really was, you know, just such a rock for that team. I think the, you know, he doesn't have to be an offensive superstar in my mind to win the award. I think it is an all-around defenseman award, and I think, unfortunately, Jason, that hasn't been the case in the past couple of years when you've seen it given to guys like Subban and Carlson, who just can't play in their own end. Or, you know, Subban's gotten better. I think Carlson's still an adventure back there, you know, at times. But, you know, ultimately, I think, you know, we've gotten it wrong as voters when, you know, we've voted just strictly on points. It's not about points. It's look at the explanation of the awards. It says the player, you know, all around, best all around at that position. In my mind, you know, you can talk about Zdeno Chara as not a flashy offensive person, but he still puts up points. You know, they still use him differently than any other defenseman because of the size in front of the net. And it's on the other end where he really earns his keep because, you know, he makes Tukarask's job easier. He allows, you know, a guy like Rask to be a little bit more ready and prepared once they get to the playoffs. And the only real question, I think, is, you know, how much gas he has left in the tank now at his advanced age, because that really dictates what Boston does and what Boston's able to do. So, you know, on a team that was, you know, the best regular season team in the NHL, I think the guy that was the cornerstone of it deserved that award.
Vezina.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get a vote for this one. This isn't ours, but yeah. I wanted it to go to Varlamov. I think Varlamov, yeah, Had the numbers, had the rebound type performance. I don't think that should factor in necessarily, but didn't necessarily have the biggest lockdown defense in front of him. Had some great young horses to go with, but this wasn't a defense-minded team. So Varlamov would be it for me.
I look at Colorado. Varlamov, I agree with you. I had Ryan O'Reilly as the Lady Bing. The guy had one penalty all year, and it was playing with a broken stick. McKinnon is the obvious for the rookie, and Patrick Watt, to me, is the coach of the year. Like, Colorado could dominate tonight.
Oh, they really could. And we had we have our own awards and our issue that's just coming out with a pretty cool shot on the beach on the front, Jason. And our executive of the year and our coach of the year were in that issue. Our executive was Dean Lombardi, and we do factor in the playoffs, obviously, in that. So you can see why Dean would be our choice there. But we stuck with Patrick Waugh, even though Daryl Sutter would have been an easy choice. Patrick Waugh, in my mind, did a phenomenal job, just challenging them to kind of change their play a little bit, become more active, from the defense out. And he turned a guy like a Tyson Berry, for instance, into a budding star. I don't want to get too much ahead of myself to say Tyson Berry is going to be a Norris Trophy winner, but I think a guy like him, really improved his stock, and to be infused with that type of confidence as he was, I think really says a lot about what Patrick Waugh did.
Yeah, he definitely added something. I was surprised, actually. The GM of the year, the three guys nominated, I'm not even sure they are the three best GMs this year.
No, I agree.
Because to me, the GM of the year is a guy who made moves this year, right?
Right. And well, of course.
And it might be the, and I don't know if, do you think the General Manager Award should maybe be the only award that also considers the playoffs? Because a lot of times the biggest moves happen at the trade deadline, and then you only have 6 weeks to decide if it was a good move or not if you didn't include the playoffs. Or would that make it too one-sided?
Yeah, no. But I think, if you asked GMs to judge themselves within the industry and set their own standards, that's what it would be. You're judging it by the Stanley Cup champion. And a guy like Dean Lombardi, I think, is the perfect example. I mean, he could have done a lot of different things with that team. He could have blown it up. He could have, he could have not traded for Marion Gaborik. He could have done a whole bunch of different things. And, he made all the right moves. He hired the right people. Some moves didn't work out that don't come to the surface or don't stick out at this time, Jason. But I just don't know. I think, to me, it's an award almost like the coach of the year. You can make a good case for probably five or six guys for different reasons, right? I mean, one, you could argue that it's about the cup. Two, you could argue it's about overall growth as a team, taking a team that went from 30th to a playoff spot. You could approach it in any type of different way you want to. So to me, that's where you have to draw a line. And I think the logical line for most people, especially the GMs, is the championship.
Adam Proto joins. Adam, I'm not. Did you read Steve Simmons' article today on Josh Hosang?
I sure did. It was terrific.
Very interesting. I'm just tweeting out to any of our listeners. And for people who don't know, he's a very talented, skilled guy. He's Jamaican. He's gotten into some trouble being late a few times, I guess. And, he's pretty flamboyant. And it's interesting. He even admitted his own GM, when he dangles, he calls him a Harlem Globetrotter. And that, without even saying it, his GM probably doesn't realize that he's maybe making a racial, undertone with that.
Right.
The conformist part of the NHL, do you think it changes? And, is this guy, a forward version of PK Subban?
Yeah, I do have some hope for hockey, Jason. I criticize hockey all the time, but I think, I do so because it's the right thing to do. And I do think you see the hockey world responding, right? I mean, homophobia in hockey is being stamped out at an excellent rate. I said to people before, it was awful seeing what happened to PK Subban in Boston, having to deal with more, blatant racism. But the heartening thing was the outcry against it. That's what sticks out for me now, that when people are willing to, to reflect the changes in society, even if it's just some of the people, then I think that's a good start. And if there's, an element of the hockey world that doesn't want to adapt or to consider that, that you might be okay as a player to show joy on your face or smile after a goal or all the things that, that I think the outside world takes for granted. In the hockey world, you're under such a microscope, you're expected to conform, to such a great degree. you know, that it does become more like a somber duty and not a fun sport. And if you're trying to recruit kids and you want to, you know, keep the game flourishing, you know, not just in Canada, but outside of of this country, I do think you have to find players who are willing to do that. And you know, Joshua Hosang, you know, I don't know enough about him to speak on him too much, but from Steve's column, I saw a young guy who was, you know, pretty self-confident, you know, who understands, you know, that minorities in this game still have a long way to go before you can even talk about, you know, parity or balance. It's still a Caucasian sport. It's still a, you know, an upper middle class sport to a certain degree. And I think hockey needs to get past that to a degree. You can't survive in the long term in this ever shrinking bubble of conformity and tradition when, you know, the rest of the world is moving in the opposite direction.
And quickly, will we see a trade involving the number one pick on Friday?
I'm going to say yes. I think Florida's definitely, you know, for a lot of reasons, looking to do something big. You know, when they brought in Luongo, I thought that was a signal, and they've said it basically that, you know, they want to contend sooner than later. So they've got enough great talent. Barkov's going to be a phenomenal player, and you know, I don't know that there's a game breaker out there that really interests them more than a veteran or two who can help them right away. So I think they definitely trade it.
Adam, always good to talk to you. Have a great night.
Same here, Jace. Thanks.